WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. We are live from Broadcast House, and we have a pretty good lineup for this evening. We do our best to put together a good talk show and have some great guests. We'll kick things off with State Representative Josh Cutler, representing the 6th Plymouth District. And one of the things we'll talk about, sure, we can talk a little bit about Happy North Atlantic Right Whale Day. We can do that. But we can also talk about, how about the idea of having a 4-day work week? We'll talk about legislation for that. And this week kicks off the budget discussions in the House, the debate for the fiscal 24 budget. So we'll talk with him in just a moment about that. Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, he joins us. And we have a few things to chat with him about, including his trip to D.C., having a chance to speak with some of the federal legislators, the legislative delegation that serves the city of Brockton, as well as, did you know that there's a new football coach that doesn't have the last name Columbo in the City of Champions? We'll talk a little bit about that, the new hiring for a new football coach. Our number two, Jeff Chasen. We'll speak with him. He is with Refresh Recovery Centers, one location located in Noble. We'll find out what the Refresh Recovery Centers do differently when it comes to helping folks get through substance abuse and to recover. And then we'll close things out. Do you know that later this week, it is the NFL draft? Not just one day, not two, but 3 days. I believe it kicks off on Thursday night. We have WATD Sports Director Quinn Kelly will be joining us here live in studio. And Keith Hayes, who actually is a local podcaster, we'll chat with him about the draft. Stay tuned for that. But we start things off right now with State Representative Josh Cutler. So we have the State House Report. Representative, how are you?
Good evening, Kevin. I'm doing great. I'm doing well. We have a little bit of housekeeping we have to take care of before we get to the issues at bay, though.
Really? What is the housekeeping that you want to get to?
I love to give you a hard time. It's out of love. But all the folks in the intro are no longer in office. And I've been waiting, I think, now 10 years to make it to the intro. I think we're due for some change.
Well, I think you're wrong.
And I think I brought this up before, and there was a lot of support for it, so I'm just kind of pressing my case now.
Bob Hedlund is still in office. He's still an elected official.
He is.
I believe when he did that, he was mayor when he did that. I believe that Sheriff McDonald and the District Attorney Tim Cruz are still in office.
Yeah, fine gentlemen. They both are, yeah. I think I heard Suzanne Bump. I think I heard Governor Baker. I think I heard a couple of representatives, my former colleagues.
If you want, I'll say touche. It's in the works. We are sifting through some of the great comments and conversations that we've had over the years, and it's just so tough to cull it down to just a handful to fit in.
Listen, I'm not even advocating for myself. I'm just advocating for change. How about that?
Okay. So
I'm advocating for kind of giving you a hard time because that's. that's how I roll.
No, I wish you were here in person doing it, but and you're a busy guy. I know we were.
Well, we are doing the house budget this week, so important stuff we're up to.
What are we looking forward to? I mean, is there going to be, how much of a debate are you expecting? $55 billion piece of legislation, is there going to be some sizable conversation going on or what?
Well, I think a lot of debate has already happened. You know, we've had, we're fortunate here in the South Shore, we have a lot of members of the House Ways and Means Committee delegation that, you know, both Democrat and Republican, I know, were well represented. So I think we've had a lot of debate already, and this week the formal process of budget amendments plays out in the House. That's already underway. We're taking up education-related amendments actually today, public safety ones in shortly. And so, you know, I'm pretty optimistic. I think, you know, we'll have a good budget, a good balanced budget that makes some key investments and a lot of things that we care about, certainly here on the South Shore and throughout the state.
See, you didn't give me a chance to wish you a happy North Atlantic Right Whale Day today.
Well, I was hoping we'd come to that. So that was yes.
Yeah, but you had Rob Hakula,
had the whole WATD crew, including Mr. Perry, up in Boston today. Really delighted to have them to help commemorate North Atlantic Right Whale Day. And I mean it when I say it. I'm really grateful to WATD and to Rob and to you, Kevin, and to Ed and the whole team who really got behind this nice community effort that Matt Delaney initiated, and turned out to be a really nice story. And we had sort of capping off today with a formal ceremony at the New England Aquarium in Boston. We had Governor Healey, one of her top staff members there to help, you know, kind of commemorate this first ever North Atlantic Right Whale Day. We had a who's who of different legislators, and it was just a really nice feeling to have, you know, somebody make positive change in that way and be able to see that through to the end and have a successful result.
Well, not to diminish the right whale, but let's talk about the folks who I believe that you are somehow, you are one of how many legislators who actually have co-filed legislation for a Massachusetts Smart Work Week pilot program?
Yes. So in addition to our right whales, I'm proud to be the House Labor Chair, and so in that role, we filed legislation along with one other colleague, Representative Fernandez, to create a pilot program to establish a four-day work week. So there's a lot, obviously, to unpack there. What I think the important things to note are is that this is a pilot program, okay? So it's an opportunity for businesses to voluntarily sign up to be a part of the pilot, to get benefits from it, to report some of the data that they see from their employees, and to craft, you know, a plan that allows workers to work meaningful reduction in hours without a subsequent reduction in pay. And that's kind of the key part of this. I think we've, you know, through the pandemic, we've seen how where we work and how we work can change, and maybe in ways that we didn't, you know, think was possible before the pandemic. And now we're talking about how long we work. And I think it's a natural sort of extension of that discussion. To kind of look at that, it's been, if you look back in history, Kevin, it's been since, you know, World War II, the beginning of World War II, since the Fair Labor Standards Act was approved, I believe it was 1939, I believe. And so, you know, that's a long time to have basically the same work traditions that we've been living with. And so having a chance to take a fresh look at that, I think many businesses are already doing that. You know, the pandemic has forced people to kind of make some creative solutions, to look for creative solutions. And having a four-day work week, you know, where people, you know, we want workers to be happier. We want them to be more productive. We know that in many cases, productivity can be just as strong in a lesser amount of time if workers have a better work-life balance. You know, things like mental health are all things we have a better, I think, read on now than we might have in the past. So these are all some of the reasons why we filed this legislation. And again, it's a pilot program, so on a mandate, no one's being forced to do this. We're creating a pilot program so that businesses can sign up to participate, that we get a tax credit for reporting their data, and we hope that, you know, after the pilot program is you know, run through, we have some, you know, really good strong data that we can make some more informed decisions about maybe what the next step would be.
What kind of support is this piece of legislation receiving amongst your colleagues?
Well, it's turned out to be quite popular on all sides, actually. I knew it would be popular, you know, with many employee employees. And I have to say, I've gotten a lot of response from business owners as well. Some of them has been, you know, around the lines of, hey, I'd like to sign up and, you know, be part of this. And I have to break it to them that it's still just a bill. We still have to get it passed. But others who said, hey, listen, I already do this, or I was already planning to do this, or I did a program already like this. And I'm surprised how many businesses have said that. A couple of businesses have even talked about some of the tangible results they saw with, you know, happier employees that are more productive as a result of the changes that they made. So it's been very well received by employees, and I have to say it's been very well received by the business community as well, as far as the folks that we've been able to talk to.
Where did such an idea come from? Is this something, I know this is something that has been bandied about, and I think actually is in being utilized in Europe. I mean, are there any other states
absolutely,
that are doing this?
So there's no other states that are doing it. There's some other jurisdictions that are doing it. Our bill, we got some inspiration from the state of Maryland, which had a piece of legislation that they looked at. I know in Europe and the UK, there's been a lot of work, a lot of studies that were done. A big study was done in the UK. In fact, we connected with some of the folks there. There's a professor at Boston College, Professor Shore, who we've been working with, who's done a lot of work academically on four-day work weeks and different types of work schedules from an academic point of perspective. So there's a growing body of evidence about this. I think, you know, that's part of what we're trying to collect, though, is have this be an evidence-based decision and get the data. We think we know what kind of data, you know, we're going to get, but, you know, that's why we do the pilot, find out.
I think one of the things that I've had reoccurring conversations, the one thing that is concerning is being able to get qualified employees or employees who are willing to work, because we see a lot of areas, whether it's public safety, whether it's in the culinary restaurants, yeah, that are suffering as to not being able to have enough of a workforce. Is this something that hopefully will help replenish the workforce? If there are enough companies or organizations that are willing to give this pilot program a try?
Yeah, so I think, you know, number one, it's not going to work for every single type of business.
Right.
Obviously, in some areas, it's going to be more challenging. But there are a lot of businesses where it can work. And I think what I would say is that when you're talking about trying to attract workers, you know, you're looking for that competitive advantage, because you're right. Everybody's looking for qualified help, and there's just not enough, you know, qualified workers out there. And so if you're the kind of business that offers, you know, better benefits, like, hey, a four-day work week, you know, you're going to be more attractive to a potential employee than someone perhaps who doesn't. And so I think it gives your business a competitive edge when it comes to hiring and retaining talent. And that's really what it's all about these days, is hiring and retaining talent. So whether, you know, offering better pay, better benefits, a four-day work week, you know, maybe a hybrid work environment, you know, those businesses that are being more creative and finding ways to, you know, to reach out to their employees are going to be more successful. It just makes sense. And so I think, you know, there is a good case to be made that this is something that gives businesses a competitive advantage.
Okay. Are there any other pieces of legislation that will be a part of the conversation that you have had a hand in or that you have supported?
In terms of four-day work week?
No, it's just as far as any legislation or as far as the budget itself. I mean, what are you foreseeing the main discussions being besides numbers and how the governor's budget is you know, playing a role in this?
Yeah, no, sorry. Obviously, there's a lot going on, a lot of different moving pieces. You know, as in my role as labor and workforce chair, you know, I'm really focused on a lot of the line items that have to do with, you know, our workforce. One of the things that I'm really proud of is something called the Career Technical Initiative, and that's something, you know, where we provide funding for our vo-tech schools to run basically like a second shift, and you know, leveraging all the tools, the equipment, the mechanics, and the machinery that they already have in place, and running a second shift, you know, that second shift after work into the evening, to get more folks, you know, the benefit of that training, is something that Governor Baker actually had started, and now Governor Healey is continuing. And we've been successful, and I'm really proud of to be able to, you know, to fight for some increased funding for the CTI program, which is paying benefits here on the South Shore with our South Shore Vo-Tech School, but also Vo-Tech schools around the state. And so that's the kind of creative thinking I think we need. You know, we're trying to leverage existing tax dollars and all these existing assets that we have, you know, in our vo-tech schools, and you know, expanding that to a broader group of people who can benefit from that. So we've been, you know, I've been focusing on trying to get extra revenue to help beef up that pilot program. Excuse me, that pilot. It's not a pilot program, to beef up that line item. And we've been successful, and hopefully this budget week will be even more successful in getting a little bit more extra money. So those are some of the things we're working on. I have another initiative I've been working on. We have some great reentry programming for people who are coming out of a period of incarceration. Obviously, that's another potential area of workers who historically have been have not had as many opportunities. And so trying to make sure we have the programming, like, you know, you mentioned Sheriff McDonald in jail, and also in our vo-tech schools and our community colleges like Massasoit, to make sure we have the program to help people, you know, get back on their feet and find a good career. We went earlier this session and toured a great program at Massasoit that does diesel mechanic engine training, which is a pretty lucrative career field. And they have a whole program specially designed for folks coming out of houses of correction. So I think these are the kind of creative ways we need to think, I think, in this environment when we're everyone's kind of looking for workers. And I think, you know, these are, it may sound very different, but a four-day work week or reentry programs or CTI all are all part of that same kind of getting creative with our workforce and trying to find solutions. And that's what really motivates me.
What about as far as the governor's initiative to supply 2-year colleges to
Reconnect? Yes. Yeah. So that fits in perfectly. Yeah, you're right on the dot there, Kevin. That's another thing that we do fund, which is a last dollar program to help people who are over the age of 25 who have want to complete a community college degree. We know that is a big part of, you know, not just the education, but, you know, the workforce. Getting that community college degree really opens up a lot of career pathways. And so Governor Healey has really prioritized her what she calls Mass Reconnect, and that is funded $20 million in our budget, in the House budget, which I suspect will... we'll find, you know, a lot of popular support on both sides of the aisle. So that's you know, that's another piece of the puzzle. You know, we need as many, you know, interlocking pieces to put together for our workforce, and that's a key one. And so I think you know, it's another thing I'm really proud to help work on.
Let's take things back to your district, and I saw a picture of you, another representative, Kathy Lenatra, and it looks like you took a picture at a work site. It looked like it might be the work site for
the future home of the Pembroke Community Center, I believe.
Yeah. It looks like they've already started erecting some of the beams, and they've already got a foundation in place. Talk to me about this project.
Yeah, no, that project is going along great. This is the Pembroke Community Center. The taxpayers of Pembroke have been so generous in funding and supporting the community center. It's going to be a great addition with, you know, combined intergenerational facility for young people, for seniors, people of all ages. And so they've already, you know, broken ground. We had a groundbreaking ceremony recently, and I was there just this week with some folks from Local 7, the Local 7 ironworkers, because they had done some of the steel framing and wanted to check it out. And it's great to see a local project like this moving along very, you know, in a expedited way, but also it's great to see local union folks that are one to building it, people who live in the town of Pembroke and live in our neighboring communities. So that was kind of cool. And I think we have one more topping off ceremony coming up in a week or two. But that project is on track. And as far as I understand, it's on budget. And, you know, we're looking forward to next spring having a groundbreaking.
What's your hope in regards to staying with Pembroke? I know that there's conversation about having a new public safety campus, police and fire. Is that something you'll be watching?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's good. It's a good segue. You're the master of segues, Kevin, because actually tomorrow I have Chief McDonald and Chief Viveros, the Pembroke Police and Fire Chiefs, are both coming up to visit us at the State House to visit Representative Lenatra and Senator Moran and myself. And so I'm sure that'll be one of the things on the agenda to talk about. But we invited them up and wanted to kind of have a chance to talk to them now that the State House is fully open and you know, can get those lines of communications going, talking about budget needs and personnel issues and, you know, obviously public safety needs. So they'll be coming up tomorrow. I was just actually talking with our team about, you know, lunch plans and making sure we were all set on that. I'm sure that'll be one of the agenda items we'll be talking about, is a great new community center and public safety building, a combination building that's in the works. And that'll be on the town meeting floor coming up very soon.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I mean, it is town. I believe one of your towns might have already had their town meeting at Duxbury has usually.
Duxbury does that town meeting very early.
Very early.
March, yeah.
Yeah. But you still have a few that are kind of pending. What do you watch for? What do you listen for when it comes to the local town meetings and looking and seeing how their budgets are doing and hearing from the local officials when it comes to any asks, especially when it comes to Chapter 70 money?
Yeah, you know, that's where we get our best ideas is you know, kind of following town meeting. I always have a fine habit of getting the town meeting warrant. The annual report that they put out, usually it comes out at town meeting, because that has a lot of information. And you know, a lot of times it'll have information on the town's capital plans. And those are good sources of, you know, trying to find ways we can help with different projects to help our communities, you know, whether it's a big ticket item like a community center or a police and fire building, or if it's a smaller ticket item like a new police boat. Whenever we can find ways to try to help the community, and the town meeting is a good source of that. So it's a good way to kind of keep your pulse on what's going on in the community, and when folks reach out and let us know and share their priorities. So as a former elected official, I know how hard our local folks work, and certainly we appreciate it very much.
No, I want to also allow you a moment if you want. Do you want to talk a little bit about the tax relief bill and some of the highlights in regards to the really, it was $1.1 billion tax relief package that the House passed, and I think maybe it's on to the Senate now, yes?
Yes, that's correct. So the House passed a tax relief package last week, or I want to say maybe 2 weeks ago. My time is...
it's about 10 days ago.
10 days, thank you. Yeah. I'm just trying to pull up the summary right now. And that had a lot of good pieces in it. Big piece of it that I think a lot of people are focused in on is the estate tax. There's been a lot of talk about how Massachusetts estate tax threshold at $1 million is much lower than many other of our peer states. And it's something that we want to be careful of and being sure that we're competitive with other states when it comes to our different types of taxation. And so we're making an important change in the estate tax to double the threshold to $2 million. And also remove, there was a penalty trigger that would subject somebody to the entire state to tax if only a penny of it went over. So we'll be changing that provision as well to remove that sort of punitive part of that. So that was a big piece of the tax relief package, but it included some other smaller pieces like increasing the senior circuit tax breaker credit for senior citizens.
Yeah, you've doubled it.
Qualify to get... To get relief on their taxes, their property taxes, excuse me. It includes an increase in the renter's deduction. So obviously we want to be cognizant of, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are renters that are having trouble with rents going up so high. It includes a child care dependent, an increase in the child care dependent tax credit. It includes an increase in the EITC, which is a bigger percentage of the federal tax credit, excuse me. It includes... it includes a reduction that actually brings us more in line with our short-term capital gains tax, which is in some cases can be as high as 12%. It would reduce that down to 5%, but it's in line with what other states do and what our current income tax is. So some good relief for taxpayers. It passed the House unanimously, a bipartisan bill, and now it's over in the Senate, and we expect that they'll be taking it up sometime soon, hopefully. We'll have a good tax package to help provide some little bit of relief to folks and make sure Massachusetts remains continues to be competitive.
Anything we haven't touched upon while we're sitting here chatting? Anything that you might want to bring up before we say goodbye?
Well, no, I appreciate, as always, Kevin, a chance to kind of come on and talk about what's going on. We got a lot going on this week. Actually, I neglected to mention we also have a group from the Pembroke Senior Center coming up to visit tomorrow, so we're excited about that. And then on Wednesday, we have the girls soccer team, excuse me, the girls lacrosse team coming up to visit. The girls field hockey team, Mike, who won the state title, to come up to the state house to be recognized. So lots going on this week, and we're really excited to have visitors and have people coming back in to visit us. And if folks want to reach out, we encourage you to do that. If you want a tour, if you'd like to sit down and talk, we offer local office hours, or still do remote office hours too. So please don't be shy.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back on maybe in a couple of weeks. Maybe do an update, see if there's been any movement in regards to the pilot program for a 4-day work week. See if it's received and see if it moves along.
Can we get that going at ATD, you think?
Yeah, possibly. Well, I don't know. You have to talk to Ed Perry. That's his ball of wax number.
Okay, I should have brought it up today when I saw it. I should have brought it up, but I didn't.
Catch him in a sweet spot.
Right whale.
And if folks want to, if your constituents want to reach out to your office and talk to your fine staff, how can they do that?
Yeah, the easiest way is to, you know, start with the website, joshcutler.com, or you can call our state house office, 617-722-2013. It's our state house number. We have a great team that is here to help. And, you know, whatever we can do, whether it's constituent services or you just want to weigh in on an issue or need some help with something, please feel free to reach out.
Excellent. Well, Representative, again, thank you so much for your time and for your hard work on behalf of the taxpayers of Massachusetts.
Thank you, Kevin. Next time I'll be there in person. I'll give you a hard time in person, okay? How about that?
I look forward to it. I'm going to mark my calendar. There he is.
Thank you, everybody.
You got it. State Representative Josh Cutler representing the 6th Plymouth District. Up next, Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan chimes in just a moment. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you 24/7 at AA.org. Find online meetings at AAboston.org.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. Don't forget, so later in the radio program, we'll speak with Jeff Chasen, who is co-founder of a new organization called Refresh Recovery Centers. Also, I'm going to talk a little NFL draft. It's almost like those who love football, it's like Christmas. We're going to speak with Keith Hayes and WATD Sports Director Quinn Kelly will join me, and we'll chat about this. But first, we have a chance to speak with the Humanitarian of the Year, awarded by the Haitian Community Partners Foundation, Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, and unofficial co-host of Monday Night Talk. Mayor, welcome back to Monday Night
Kevin,
Talk, sir.
How are you? Thank you. Thank you for that intro. I appreciate it.
The Humanitarian of the Year. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really was. It was an honor. And, I don't serve in public office to get awards, but it was really a wonderful evening to be recognized, and I truly appreciate it. I was able to spend the evening with my mayoral team that we have in the office and my wife, and it was a really wonderful night at Lombardo's a couple weeks ago, so I was really honored.
it's kind of sad. I'm hearing that Lombardo's is going to be going by the wayside, that, you know, that functional, that a lot of big things that are held, just like the Shaw Center, but it's another one right on the South Shore that's going to be no more.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I spoke to the Lombardo family, and, you know, the next generation is kind of going in a different direction. So, you know, it's been kind of an icon, right? I mean, a lot of us had our proms there and different events. I had my inaugural when I was elected mayor of Brockton. We had 800 people there that night, and it's a really wonderful thing with the classic chandelier. So, you know, I thank the Lombardo family for everything they've done, and, you know, we will be opening up the Shaw Center in the near future as well. So we will be able to have some you know, opportunities in the City of Champions to have events as well.
Is there any updates on the Shaw Center? I know that some work needed to be done. Is that what's happening right now? I mean, it also is almost baseball season for the Brockton Rocks.
Yeah, a couple different things. So we when I became mayor, I mean, it was in total disrepair, but we put millions of dollars into it so far since I've been mayor. And the county gave us some CARES Act funds we were able to utilize to get some of the air conditioning and HVAC system back up. And we actually used it, as you know, as a vaccine clinic location. And we did it so successful that the state said it was a regional site. So they just stopped doing regional shots there every Saturday. It just kind of wound down last month. So what I'm doing right now is I transitioned our Council on Aging downtown in Brockton on Main Street across from the YMCA Senior Center. I'm spending some ARPA money, $4 million, to make a massive renovation for our seniors. So they have relocated to the Shaw Center for the next year so we can do the construction project at the Council on Aging, and then they will transition back in a year's time, and then we'll be able to have that the Shaw Center the way it should be. It will be a community gathering location for events, and it's going to be a great thing to get that back going.
Now, are you somebody who attends a lot of Brockton Rocks games, or just when
you have? I do, actually, yeah. And, you know, the new owner is a guy named Brian Kahn, and, you know, he's a baseball guy, and I've had really good relationship with him since he took over the ownership. And we have a new general manager from Florida coming up as well that was affiliated with the New York Yankees, and I won't hold that against him because he's not with the Yankees anymore, so I'm trying to convert him to a Red Sox fan. But, you know, last year, as you know, we had a lot of legacy players, right? A lot of the Major League player all-stars from the Red Sox and Sheffield, the Yankees, their sons played.
Yep.
You know, we had Pedro, we had Big Poppy, we had Sheffield's kid, we had, who else do we have?
Keith Foulkes' kid.
Son. Yeah, Keith Foulkes' kid. Yeah, yep. Exactly. So some of those kids have actually gone on, and they're going to be going into the Cape Cod League this summer down the Cape. So some of them won't be back for the Rocks. But opening day is the 24th of May, and again, we're spending a lot of money to repurpose and revitalize the concession stands, and I've changed out all the air conditioning and new scoreboard, $750,000 scoreboard was ordered, and the LED lights. So, you know, you have to put money in to a venue that's a city asset, but we have a great ownership in there right now, and it's going to be family friendly. I made sure of that, and I'm looking forward to having a really great Rock season again here in the city of Brockton.
You know, interesting enough, I'm not sure if I want to move on to right next door to Brockton High School, or if we want to talk about your trip down to D.C. I think maybe while we're in the neighborhood, why don't we talk a little bit about hiring a new football coach whose last name isn't Colombo?
Yeah, first of all, let me just thank the Colombo family. I mean, I had the honor to play. I was not a good football player, but I was on the team, and I got my Super Bowl ring. And Coach Almond Colombo was just an unbelievable mentor and coach for just so many people. And Peter, his son, took over. So 53 straight years of a Colombo family member coaching Brockton Boxers and Brockton football. So I want to thank the Colombo family. And the superintendent of the schools, Mike Thomas, again, he was class 87 of Brockton High, and I was 88. And you know, as the mayor, I don't have the ability to hire folks from the school side. That falls under the jurisdiction of the superintendent. But he has been able to hire, and I support this, Jermaine Wiggins, Super Bowl champion New England Patriots tight end, who is the head coach now. We had a wonderful press conference last week. I had the opportunity to sit down with Coach Wiggy and talk to him about not just X's and O's on the field. Of course, he's an expert in that, but you know, what else are you going to do to help the boys and girls that play football go on to the either college or, you know, what are they going to do after they graduate? Number one, they have to graduate, right? And he stressed, you know, mentorship program. It's not just what he can do on the football field, but it's off the football field. Two of his own sons have just been recruited. One is a freshman at UMass for football, and one was just recruited. So that's Division I. So, you know, he understands that the academics is a crucial part. And, you know, he was someone that once the superintendent gave me the heads up, you know, I support this endeavor. And I also want to thank all the assistant coaches. I mean, we've had people that have been dedicating so much time to mentor and to coach. And, you know, if you play football or you play any type of sport in high school, I mean, that's what it's about, right? It's about, you know, gaining lifelong friends. And so Coach Wiggins is someone that, again, being a Super Bowl champ, understanding, he came from East Boston, so he grew up in Eastie, and he made no bones about it. You know, he his mom was, you know, working two or three jobs, and, you know, they were not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, and he was able to get a scholarship, and he graduated from University of Georgia. And you know, he had a great NFL career. But, you know, not every kid is going to get recruited to Division I or II or III. And, you know, he understood that. So I'm excited about it. He's got really a good sense of energy. And, you know, he's someone that I think is going to bring some really wonderful magic on the field and off the field. And as mayor and as a fan of football, specifically Brockton High football, right, it's an exciting time right now.
Have you heard from any Brockton High alumni, Brockton High football alum, who have said, you know, that they've come up to you, or you've heard them talk amongst other Brockton High School alums saying, hey, this is a good move, this is something that can be positive for our youth and for our football program?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from countless folks. Again, I mean, there were quite a few of them that were at the press conference when Coach Wiggy was announced. And, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, what he's going to do, again, on and off the field. So, you know, to come to the City of Champions and to have a legacy. And, you know, it's not just the wins and losses that Brockton has done, you know, over the years. It's really what the football players have become, you know, after high school and beyond. And so, you know, there are a lot of guys that I played sports with and I played football with that have reached out to me, and they're excited about it. And, you know, we really have in Brockton, again, we've had a legacy of success with sports. And, you know, I envision that it's just going to continue and actually be enhanced. So it's an exciting time.
It's moving on to another Brockton topic. I know that it was something that that has been reported on at this radio station, and something that you're very proud of that your team was able to do, and that is to keep a supermarket in the city of Brockton, especially knowing that not long ago, it was a few years ago, you used to have supermarkets on the south side of the city. And
that's right.
Now that's probably the one area that's kind of a void. And to have another one, you know, to talk about leaving the city, how crucial was it to make sure that you spoke to the folks at Stop and Shop and their ownership and say, hey, this is important to our city and this is important to our livelihood?
That's critical. I mean, it was critical. And you know, I used to shop on a regular basis on the west side because I live on the west side. So, you know, when the Belmont Street Stop and Shop closed.
Yeah, they closed it.
You know, yeah, they closed it. And it sat vacant for a very, very long period of time. And a portion of the building is still vacant. So, you know, Shaw's is still there. And, of course, we have Market Basket. We have Vincente's. You know, there's supermarkets. But in the Campello, the south side, years ago when Shaw's closed, you know, I had a meeting. I was a councilor at large at the time, and the Ward 4 council was a gentleman named Paul Studensky, the former police chief. And we had a meeting down in West Bridgewater, and the Shaw's folks, you know, they made no bones about it. They wanted to keep it vacant. They were going to pay rent, and they didn't want any competition in there. So, I mean, it had a detrimental impact, you know, on our senior citizens that live in the Campbell high-rise. So, you know, as soon as I had heard some whispers about potentially Stop and Shop on North Montello Street closing, it's not just a supermarket. I mean, it's a banking institution. It's a gas station. It's a pharmacy. It's not just for Brockton. It's a regional approach. You have folks coming in from Holbrook. And so, you know, I worked with all the city councilors. I drafted a letter to the CEO of Stop and Shop and the parent companies Ahold, and had a couple different conversations with a gentleman named Sean Spillane, and you know, he got it. He definitely got it. Now, they don't own the building, right? It's a West Coast real estate investor that owns the building. But, you know, we made it clear that, you know, we really needed that to stay. And, you know, we didn't give any tax breaks or anything like that. I know there were some rumors out there that we did, but we didn't. I just made it clear that, listen, you know, this is crucial to that side of the city and beyond. And they listened to us, and I'm really thankful that they did. And, you know, they're going to be staying. And we had a nice event up there with all the Stop and Shop people. And again, they're based in Quincy, and they came down, and They're actually going to be doing additional food services for the food pantry. You know, they're going to be teaming up with the Charity Guild. They already have, since 2019, a food distribution at Massasoit Community College in Brockton as well. So, you know, I thanked them personally as the mayor, but just as a guy that grew up in Brockton, I knew how critical it was. And, you know, I'm really pleased that we can say that they are not closing, that will not be a vacant store, and people are going to still be able to get everything that they need at the Stop and Shop on North Montello Street for the foreseeable future, which is exciting.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Brockton Mayor, Humanitarian of the Year, unofficial co-host of Monday Night Talk, no official co-host of Monday Night Talk, Robert Sullivan, who joins us. Well, one of these days, we're going to bait the hook with a big enough worm to be able to get him in here to sit in studio with us for a show.
I would love to do that. I mean, going down to Marshfield is like a field trip.
It actually is.
I would love to do that.
Yeah.
I would. I'm trying to juggle my dad duties with baseball and soccer.
Yeah.
And of course, city council meets tonight and tomorrow night, school committee. And of course, as mayor, I chair the school committee. So there will be a free Monday night when I can get down there, and I look forward to it.
Your boy, I can't believe how big your boys are getting. It's incredible.
They are rather large individuals, and they love to play sports, and my daughter loves to play soccer, and you know, a lot of my friends that have children that are much older now say, hey, enjoy every moment, because when it's gone, you're going to kick yourself. So, you know, had opening day the other day with my youngest, and I was able to spend time there, both as a dad and also as the mayor, and you know, it's exciting. You know, Kevin, as you know, I mean, Brockton is always about sports and community and gathering, just like any of the local towns in Plymouth County. But to have 250 kids playing in the Brockton Baseball Association League this year, and another 130 kids over at the Boxers Little League on the south side in Campello, you know, it's fun. And never mind, you know, the soccer and the field hockey and everything else that's going on. So it's a good time to enjoy the outdoors.
Let's take a moment to close things out on a high note and talk a little bit about your trip down to D.C. Now, as a mayor, right? Where do you stay? Do you find yourself? I love D.C. Myself, me and my missus, we go down there, and it's just I just love it. Whether you go on some of the tours, or you go to some of the museums that are down there, or even if you're just someone who is interested in government, just D.C. has it all.
It does.
Well, is there anything now? You know, mainly you went down there to speak with have conversations with our federal legislative delegation, which is always helpful if you're trying to, you know, get funding for certain things and help the city, a city of 100,000 plus, you know, to be able to continue growing and thriving.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved Washington D.C. My mom and dad took us down there when we were kids, and of course, I was a student undergrad at Boston College. In my junior year, I did a spring semester at American University, and I was able to intern on Capitol Hill for then. He just passed away. He was a great, great public servant, Brian Donnelly, who was our congressman at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I interned for Congressman Donnelly back in 91 down there. And, you know, it really is just a wonderful, wonderful city. One of my sisters went to Catholic Law School down there. So D.C. is really just a special place, right? And most of the museums are free, and it's really family-oriented. But as mayor, I find it really my responsibility to go down and really talk to the federal delegation. And, you know, Congressman Stephen Lynch is a dear friend and a wonderful, wonderful public servant on the federal level. And, you know, I was able to last year go down and meet with Congressman Lynch and also Senator Ed Markey, and I requested $5 million on behalf of the city of Brockton, and I was able to get every penny of that thanks to the federal delegation. So this year I went down and I asked for $7 million, and I met with Congressman Lynch the first day, which was Tuesday. I flew out, I got into Logan around 5:30 in the morning and flew down there and met with Congressman Lynch at 11 a.m. in his office, in the Rayburn office building. And then I went over to meet with U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, and I met with her. And then that night I went out to dinner with Congressman Lynch. And then in the morning, the next day, I actually had breakfast with Brockton native and 1963 BHS
Ken
graduate
Feinberg.
Attorney Ken Feinberg.
Wow.
And
I saw that.
He's just an unbelievable guy, and he just loves Brockton, and he's just thankful for growing up in the city of champions. And so we had breakfast, and then I had a lunch meeting with the Cape Verdean ambassador at his residence in Bethesda, Maryland. And then I concluded before I flew back to Logan at 4 o'clock on the Senate side again, I had a meeting with Senator Markey. So, you know, I think it's extremely important. I go down every January for the U.S. Conference of Mayors. All the mayors from around the United States and a lot from Massachusetts go down. And, you know, we do a lot of seminars and conferences and best practices. But this was just a quick, you know, a little over 24-hour meeting. I brought my CFO, Troy Clarkson, down there, and you know, we articulated what Brockton needs, and very thankful for the ARPA money and the federal money that's coming in. But, you know, if we can get additional funds that will subsidize and help Brockton people and Brockton businesses, that's what it's all about. It's all, you know what, we're in the people business. It's about articulating, but also networking. And the federal delegation has been very, very helpful since I've been mayor of the city of Champs.
How important is it to you as an elected official, as mayor, to be able to get FaceTime with, you know, Senator Warren, Senator Markey, Congressman Lynch? How important is it to be able to have regular conversations with them about the needs of the city?
I think it's crucial. I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't do reaches out. And I have to reach out to the federal delegation. I have regular meetings with our state delegation. Of course, Brockton has three state reps.
Yep.
Jerry Cassidy, Michelle Dubois, and Rita Mendez, and one state senator, Mike Brady. So I meet with the federal delegation. We have regular calls. And again, you know, Maura Healey and Kim Driscoll are dear friends of mine. And, you know, to be able to talk to the folks on Beacon Hill is extremely important. But again, money trickles down, right? So it goes from the feds to the state to the localities. So, you know, I will say that a lot of people say, oh, you had really unlucky times becoming the mayor, you know, 6 weeks before COVID. And that's true. You know, we've lost 536 residents to COVID, but I will tell you, it brought me the ability to speak to the federal delegation and, you know, Charlie Baker and Karen Polito on a regular basis, and now, you know, Governor Healey and Lieutenant Governor Driscoll. And so I think to be an advocate for the city, the place that I represent, and you need to do it. And so jumping on a plane, going into Reagan in an hour and 15 minutes, hour and 30 minutes, and taking an Uber over and meeting the folks, I think it's critical and it's important. And, you know, it also pays dividends. You know, I mean, to get $5 million for a visit last year, that's going to be generational. You know, $3 million to renovate our East Side pool, Kevin, which hadn't really had any money spent since 1960-something. And, you know, for a lot of us, that's the beach in Brockton,
yep.
Right? I mean, that really is. And so to be able to explain it, and I always remember this, and I know we're probably short on time, but when I articulated I needed $3 million, Ed Markey, U.S. Senator Ed Markey said, I learned to swim. I grew up in Malden. I learned to swim in a city pool. I'm going to advocate for you. And Lynch said the same thing growing up in Southie. So, you know, they get it. And so I'll continue to go back, and I'm running for re-election, so we're two-year mayors here, but I'm going to keep going, and God willing, the voters keep me in here because we have a lot more work to do in Brockton.
Mayor, I want to thank you so much. We're out of time, but let's have you back on real soon.
Thank you, Kevin. Be well. Bye-bye.
ATV-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return to Monday Night Talk. Remember, hey, if you miss any of our segments, check out the podcast, Monday Night Talk, Podbean, or just go to the website, 959watd.com. You can find us on Spotify, where most podcasts can be found. A couple of shows behind, but we're working on catching that up and trying to have a system where they're up as soon as the show is done. Just so much that goes on sometimes, it just life happens. So we promise, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll have the podcast site up to speed, and you'll be able to take that anywhere to hear some of the conversations with the great people that we have here on the South Shore and beyond. Later this hour, we're going to talk NFL draft, as we will speak with Quinn Kelly and Keith Hayes, get their take. Oddly enough, coming into the studio today, big news in regards to Green Bay Packers and the New York Jets, as now Aaron Rodgers has gone the way of his predecessor, and he is now a New York Jet. And we can talk a little bit about that, but we'll just focus on the draft. But right now, in studio, this gentleman has been here previously with me as a guest. We're here to talk a little bit about Refresh Recovery and Wellness Centers. They have a location in Nowell, and we're here to get to know Jeff Chasen, who is one of the co-founders, and he's also very well known as far as being able to get out there and talk a little bit about what's going on when it comes to recovery. Let's start. Let's get a little bit of bio on you. Tell us a little bit about yourself for folks who may or may not know who you are.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me back, Kevin. It's crazy to me that I'm following Mayor Sullivan. You know, I'm definitely not that important. But, you know, the work I'm doing is definitely important, and the work that my team is doing is even more important. I grew up in this area. I actually got arrested for the first time here in Marshfield. I'm shocked they let me back in. I was young, dumb, and, you know, getting into fist fights and you know.
Well, it depends on how you, if you came in through Pembroke, they usually don't watch the border. If it's me, I get my ID check when I'm going between Duxbury and Marshfield. So that's don't fine. Come up from Duxbury. You're more safe coming in through Pembroke.
Which is where I grew up. I grew up in Pembroke and barely made it out of high school. I went to five high schools in 4 years. Somehow pulled a diploma, you know, out of thin air through Middleborough Night School. Made a stop at Marshfield Night School prior to that. And yeah, instead of doing the college tour like some people did, I did the high school tour.
So how did you get involved with substance abuse and recovery?
You know, without going into too much detail, it's definitely something I could talk about all night. But, you know, at a young age, I found myself getting into trouble. I found myself caring very deeply that the adults and the grown-ups in my life were very unhappy with the way I was behaving. I was put on a medication, you know, which a lot of people were put on in the 90s, which I feel, you know, absent the right proper type of therapy, it kind of just set me up to have more problems. And by junior high school, you know, I found myself, you know, experimenting with, you know, with my buddies and you know, passing around a skunked beer that we had stolen from one of our parents and hid in the woods for 3 or 4 days on a hot, you know, hot summer heat wave. And I remember the first time, you know, I felt the effect, you know, that alcohol has on people. It blew me away that all of a sudden I didn't care that everyone was unhappy with me. You know, it was like a weight lifted off, and I felt like I could breathe, and I felt like I could live, and I felt like I could be myself without consequence. And, you know, to summarize, you know, addiction and alcoholism for me, I tried to chase and experience that as often as I could. And at that age, that led to a lot of problems, which thankfully having two sober parents who, you know, my mother, Judy Chasen, was a staple in the 12-step community in this area, rest her soul. You know, her and my father, who was also sober, Steve, they dragged me right into, you know, into a 12-step fellowship at a young age. Got sober for the first time at 17.
How important is sobriety, and how important is it to have the right programs or therapies? Because I don't think you can't use one therapy as a blanket way to help individuals, correct?
Correct. And I look at, you know, sobriety and recovery as two very different things. I had an almost 9-year period of sobriety in my 20s. But I did not have recovery. To me, what recovery is it's getting down to the underlying causes and conditions and treating, you know, my drinking and my substance use was a symptom of an underlying problem. And when I do those things, it would give me some temporary relief, but it wasn't sustainable. So, you know, years later, when I found myself really accidentally kind of falling into working in the treatment field professionally, you know, that concept, I saw really well illustrated by a lot of treatment centers where, and even in my own recovery, getting sober again after that almost 9-year period, I was given an opportunity to do some things differently getting sober again, through the place where I went to treatment. And those are all things we try to incorporate, into Refresh Recovery and Wellness. You know, the takeaway from that is, for me, if I just sober up, if I just dry up, and put the substances down, that's not sustainable for me. That's when my real problems start. God, I can feel the earth rotating under my feet. I'm like a raw nerve. And then eventually I run out of kind of empty things. You know, maybe it's being a workaholic. Maybe it's, you know, relationships and codependency. Maybe it's, you know, making a lot of money and spending a lot of money irresponsibly. You know, these things give us kind of temporary comfort and temporary relief, but it's not sustainable. And eventually, you know, my brain would always kind of send the neurological signal of, you know, reminding me of where I can find real relief. And you know, I pick up again without my own permission. Unless I incorporate that recovery piece and actually treat the underlying mental health issues that are driving the substance use.
So how did Refresh Recovery and Wellness come to be? How was this birthed?
It's really a great story, Kevin. So I've been professionally, you know, working in the treatment behavioral health space now for a little over 6 years, and I've had some great opportunities kind of fall into my lap. The very first, you know, I call it my first adult job in treatment, was at a South Shore center where I met my business partners Josh Williams and Matt Kelliker. You know, I had already been working for the company. They came in. You know, they were alumni of the company, meaning they had gotten sober through, you know, through this organization in the past, were living their life multiple years sober. And like me, they wanted to give back and were given an opportunity to do so. So I got to work alongside with these gentlemen a couple of years. They're like younger brothers I never had. I'm the youngest of four, and I have a pretty good idea now what I put my older brothers through. You know, and every day, you know, we came in and we were mission oriented and, you know, we had a job to do. And that job was to be there for people on arguably one of the worst days of their lives, the day that they reach out and ask for help. So through that, you know, God, and we saw people sadly pass away. We saw people experience anniversaries in their sobriety, 1 year, 2 year. We celebrated our own milestones and we got to do this all together. Then they watched me say goodbye. And, you know, I left the company, had an opportunity to help be part of the, you know, co-founding leadership team of a center out in Metro West, just outside of Worcester. That was a really cool experience. And it showed me that there's a whole world outside of kind of what I knew up until that point, and different methods and different approaches. And you know, a little while later, Josh and Matt, you know, told me that they wanted to kind of do what I did. And at first it was a real informal conversation, just talking about, you know, how I can be helpful to them. And then when the pieces started to come together, I really realized how special this project was going to be, and how meaningful it would be to be able to operate a center in the South Shore and, you know, surrounded by the communities that I grew up in.
How is Refresh different from other centers or other wellness related facilities?
To me, it truly is a collective, you know, from not, you know, that goes beyond myself, Josh, and Matt. You know, we really opened up the doors to looking at, you know, evidence-based practices, you know, time-tested clinical practices. And then there's a whole world of holistic practices that when you kind of dive down into the rabbit hole of these, you know, different things from yoga to sound healing to, you know, all different Reiki, you know, there's so many things I could sit here and talk about all night that we studied meticulously, looked at the statistics on, and kind of threw our hands up and said, you know, why aren't we seeing more of this in treatment? And what it really comes down to is when people are entering into recovery, that there can't be a cookie cutter, one size fits all approach. It's not a black and white illness, and the solution can't be black or white either. That there needs to be room for people to explore different pathways and really try on a lot of different things to figure out what fits for them. And I feel like that's something that we, you know, knocked out of the park with some of the holistic offerings at Refresh as well.
How did you kind of assemble what the programs and the therapies would be? I mean, how much research went into this on your behalf and the team's behalf to make sure that you're able to cover all the different, because there's so many different substances that folks find themselves dealing with, trying to find a way to no longer depend on those substances.
So for me, you know, I always watched my father, you know, in business. He's been a successful businessman throughout his life. He's also been sober for longer than I've been alive, and I'm 38 years old. He taught me a real valuable lesson. Anytime he would start a new company, he did so under the philosophy of he's got to surround himself with people that are smarter than he is. And that's something that Josh, Matt, and I, you know, we all kind of shared the same vision. We really got to pull out all the stops to try to get the best people we can to the table to do this thing with us, because we're not clinicians. We, you know, we don't have letters after our names. We have, you know, a drive and we have a passion to help. But we're, you know, we're really kind of underqualified, you know, if you will. So it was really important to us. You know, our clinical director, Mohammed, still blows me away at the depth of which this man, you know, has experience and knowledge, just almost exceeds my brain's ability to wrap. You know, he's been practicing for over 30 years now. And then, you know, we have just great people. You know, I'd love to direct listeners to our website. We have a whole kind of meet the team page. If you go,
I'm on it right now.
Yeah, if you go to www.refreshrecoverycenters.com,
yep.
you can find more about the team there.
And I'll run down the list. I mean, we're starting with you, who you are the business development officer, Melanie Bazillion, Mohammed Al-Sadi.
Yep.
Okay. Trevor McCarthy, Brooke Demers, Mitchell Cabral. That's all I and then there's a thing of growth, opportunity, support. Are you currently looking for other clinicians to join the team, or do you feel the team is good where it's at this moment?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't say enough about how happy I am with our starting team. We have great people, but you know, the reality is we're going to grow. You know, clients are already you know, not knocking down our door, but you know, the inquiries are rolling in. People kind of see that we are bringing something different to the table, that, you know, there's a clear difference with Refresh. So as we grow, you know, our team will need to grow. So we're definitely taking, you know, taking resumes and talking with people. And there's almost an obsession between, you know, between us that where we want to have the best team out there. We want to have the most talented minds and the most, you know, passion-driven people meeting with our clients every day, because it's that important.
The one thing that caught my attention is the line, "We love what we do, now meet who we are." And you're the first one, you're the top one, and it says caring, compassionate, dedicated, and driven. And that's when I think about, if I'm going to go and I'm going to seek help from somebody, I want to know that the individual is going, that the individuals I'm going to be working with are going to be ones who care, and I'm not just a number.
Absolutely. And Kevin, you know, when you look at, you know, people operating these treatment centers and the staff, you know, that's really going to be reflected in their personal lives too. You know, not to pat myself on the back or use myself in as an example, but I will. I've lost just over 100 pounds in the last 18 months.
Gained a hot half of it, so.
Stop, you look great. and that wasn't from taking shortcuts. It wasn't from drug use, which, trust me, I've lost close to that in the past from drug use. It was from becoming dedicated, driven, and motivated and disciplined towards something outside of my sobriety. Maybe I figured out a life hack and I found a way to transfer my addiction into fitness. But as a result of doing so, I have this amazing example, this testimony that I can bring to the table when people say, I can't do this. This is impossible. No way. That'll never be me. I was saying that about to myself for years. And here I am, half the person I was physically, not too long ago. And it really blows me away of what's possible when we harness the most powerful thing that has ever existed. It's the human mind, and it can either be our worst enemy or it can be our greatest tool, our greatest asset.
Sophisticated and innovative Massachusetts drug and alcohol rehab. Why would you say what's the sophistication to rehabilitation?
To me, it's the attention to detail. It's the attention to detail. It's treating every patient like an individual. It's not breaking out that cookie cutter, which, trust me, it's a much better business model to have the cookie cutter there. Much easier to schedule your staff, much easier to keep the overhead at a certain place. But when you approach things at an individualized level and you roll up your sleeves and you get down to the nitty-gritty of, who is this person and what does this person specifically need, the results are unbelievable. I've seen it over the years when it's been applied. And to me, that's the sophistication, is that we're willing to think outside the box and do things, in my opinion, the way they should be done.
And the first thing, why choose Refresh Recovery Centers? Individualized care. What do you hear when you've had a chance to speak with individuals who are trying to find sobriety and lasting recovery? Is it the first thing they say is that how they're treated, and that they're treated one-on-one and not something that's a page out of a book?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak from my own experience on that. When I was getting sober multiple times through multiple different means of treatment, the only time I really grew and started to make progress was when I was treated like an individual. And from that, I really got to discover who I am as a person, and what I'm passionate about and what I want to do with my time. And when we bring that to the table at our center, it's a commonality that I've seen at every center I've worked at and every center I've treated at, that I've been treated at. When you approach the problem from that angle, it really just brings kind of amazing results in people's lives.
Is there anything that we haven't touched upon in regards to Refresh that you want to make sure that we share with the audience?
I touched on the website. If you have any direct questions,
You can chat with a real person. I'm seeing that little
box here. You can chat with
That's always fun. I like, yeah. Instead of a chat bot, kind of gets a bot, it gets boring.
Or we have a 24-hour admissions line that's
wow, that's fantastic.
Manned by real people. It's not automated. Number for that is 888-655-1915. Our website's refreshrecoverycenters.com. And a good email, if you prefer email, is info@refreshrecoverycenters.com.
Now, I see something here that there's also a blog, and that's the first time I think I've seen that for a recovery center. What's the importance of being able to kind of share information via a blog to the world?
So our beautiful website is pretty new. The blog section, I believe, just has one entry. Yep. Over time, our vision for that is hopefully to educate, the public, to educate other treatment center operators that are, willing to be teachable and are still hungry to learn. Cover a wide variety of subjects, holistically, clinically, that we represent at Refresh.
Well, I want to thank you again for joining us and talking about Refresh Recovery Centers. And I'd love to have you come back, maybe if you want to bring a few members of the team somewhere down the road, just to kind of give an update and maybe share an advanced perspective.
I'd love to, and look for us and our outreach, outreach people out in the community. We'd love to meet you.
Excellent. There he is, Jeff Chasen with Refresh Recovery and Wellness Centers. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, time for dessert. We talk NFL draft here on Monday Night Talk.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hey, Tiny, I got a testimonial here from Trisha Malloy. She says, thank you so much for getting the Jeep windshield in so quickly. We were heading to our annual Jimmy Buffett concert weekend when, pop, a rock breaks the windshield. PETA was right on it.
You embarrass me with praise. My boys would have done a good job even if it were a Barry Manilow weekend. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. Actually, I kind of like Barry Manilow.
You do?
My wife likes Barry Manilow. That's why I like Barry Manilow.
Smart man.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, so we are back, and the show moves along at a fast pace, but we're at the last segment. Fantastic. Now, quick note here. Matt Mad Dog Nelson cannot join us because of technical issues with his vehicle, so he cannot join us.
It's a disappointment.
No, that's all right. Maybe another time. Do we have, not yet? Okay, so we're waiting for Keith Hayes to join us. But I think that Quinn Kelly, sports director here at WATD, can do okay to carry the load. When you look at a draft, is there a particular professional sports draft that you favor most?
Yeah, so I would say that I'm rather unique in this, and I'll give a little bit of an explanation, but I think that I could care less about the NBA draft. The NHL draft is kind of tough just because you don't see the immediate impact of that most often. NFL clearly is the biggest of the four, I would say. But I love the MLB draft, and it's just simply from having worked a little bit in summer collegiate ball and, being on the buses with kids who got the call and getting to experience that and having kids see, oh my gosh, my teammate just got drafted, and how many kids that go through that process. So I love the MLB draft, but I know that that's not really even marketed as something that people tune into too much. So the NFL draft's hard to beat.
And then joining us on the phone line is Keith Sinister One Hayes, owner of Sinister One Productions, podcaster, The Booth. I have history with Keith. We've actually, back in the day at the Brockton Signal, once known as WBET, XBR, now WBMS, 1460 AM. We used to talk, we would call the NFL draft our Christmas. But I think it was before it was expanded to three days. Keith, welcome to the conversation.
How's it going, Kevin? Glad to be here tonight.
And just so you know, Quinn Kelly, WATD sports director, he is here. to also be a bit of a prognosticator when it comes to this Thursday's first round.
Nice. Nice to see you guys tonight. Glad to be here.
Before we came on, before Monday Night Talk came on air, big news. Mm. Big news. Aaron Rodgers, finally, the Jets pulled the trigger, and Green Bay let him go to the Jets. We'll start with you, Quinn. Is any surprise to you, or were you expecting it?
Yeah, I think it was a matter of time. Certainly, Aaron Rodgers himself had made it seem like it was coming eventually. I was a little bit surprised, just in that I would have expected a little bit more compensation from the Jets going to Green Bay. Obviously, at the end of the day, Green Bay doesn't hold a ton of cards, just in that if they decide they're not going to deal Rodgers, he's, you know, probably at this point not playing for them. So you know, better off to just get something rather than watch him go into retirement or just sit out the season on you. But at the same time, when he's out there telling people, hey, I'm going to the New York Jets, and he's giving the New York Jets a list of, you know, these are the players that you need to bring in if you want me to come, well, you kind of feel like you have the upper hand if you're Green Bay. I would have expected them to, put New York's feet to the fire a little bit more.
Keith, how about you? Did you know about the trade, and did you think that Aaron Rodgers would make his way to New York?
I mean, we've been hearing this talk for almost 2 months now. I feel like he really didn't want to go, but I don't think there were any other teams that were interested in him. For me, I feel like it's a Band-Aid. Time and time again, we see the Jets do these moves such as this, and, you know, Aaron Rodgers is a Band-Aid. This is a guy that's at the end of his career. Does it even put butts in the seat? Maybe. Mm. But as far as I'm concerned, they're back to square one in a year or two. Again, looking for a quarterback. So,
have either of you had a chance to look at some of the players that are going to be either have their name called in the first round or maybe some late round drafts? Who do you each feel are the best players in the 2023 draft that you're going to be curious to see where they go? Keith?
For me, the draft, I look at the teams that what they've got coming up. The first two are definitely going to be those quarterbacks that have been talked about greatly. But for me, ever since free agency has changed in the NFL, the draft hasn't been such a sure thing with mock drafts for the last... Actually, since they moved it out of New York City, and it's gone on the road, to be honest. We've had this... You know, everybody's put together mock drafts, and we've been... The top two were maybe there, and then when you see moves like Aaron Rodgers, you know, just a week before, you see all these moves. Free agency again this year was crazy. It is tough to pick who is going to go where in these drafts. I know for the last couple of years I've been throwing my draft out the window because it's just been insane.
I will say there's another radio station up the dial that has a clever way of doing it. Afternoon Drive hosts where they throw a ball at a bunch of NFL draft prospects, and these are the individuals that are going to get drafted by the New England Patriots. And that's to say, I think there's been a few times...
Really good hit rate.
Really good hit rate. Like, wow, that's not bad. You know, what do they know that we don't? Other than, you know, the ball has a mind of its own. If we look at... And it's, you know, it's no exact science... But, you know, we look and we know, if we follow the New England Patriots, we know what the top positional needs are. Mm. Some would say wide receiver. Some would want to see bodies in the trenches, whether it's on the offensive side or defensive side. A good cornerback is the way to go. You just had Devin McCourty retire. You know, do you go for a young safety? What says you, Keith?
So the Patriots draft is an interesting situation because for those who know football, and I talked about this on your show, I talked about how Bill O'Brien was supposed to be here. I talked about how he's going to come in and change this offense to the way it's supposed to be. when you look at the team last year with Matt Patricia as offensive coordinator, you still had Devontae Parker and Kendrick Bourne and Tyquan Thornton making a lot of noise as wide receivers with a subpar play caller. How are these guys going to pan out now with a Bill O'Brien who's coming in? He's going to excite this quarterback battle at camp. You've added Juju Smith-Schuster to the mix. I think a lot of people I hear are saying, oh, yeah, the Pats are going to go wide receiver. I don't think they're going to go wide receiver. I don't think they're going to go safety. I think they're going to look at possibly one of the things I've been hating about the Pats for the last 2 years is giving up that real estate up the middle. They haven't had anybody in that spot since Vince Wilfork. I think they really need a solid nose tackle. They definitely and maybe an end that can come from the outside and be a threat and free up and help out Judon and the other kid on defense that was actually showing some promise. But again, do you think that Belichick is going to make us wait all the way until the Patriots draft and then draft down and we got to wait till the next night? Like,
get
I know
out.
You and Kevin here, me and you were like, ugh.
It happens. or you draft Division II O-line guard. It's like, what the hell is that? Quinn?
Yeah, I think that I agree with Keith in that I don't think wide receiver is the move in the first round. I'd be surprised with that. I think the point is
so you're not going, you're not pulling for a BC alum.
Oh no,
Zay Flowers.
Let's be clear. If he's available and that's a possibility, I'd love to see it.
Okay.
But really, you know, I think Keith, I think you're absolutely right. So we get so lost, and a lot of it's just because, again, you had 2 decades of near perfection, and we've hit the panic button pretty quickly. But the reality is this team was about 3 individual plays away from an 11-win season. True. With an incompetent offensive coordinator. I don't think the talent in the receiving core is really bad enough that you need to spend, you know, a 14th overall pick. Ideally, you aren't picking frequently in the middle of the first round or this high in the first round, and you're hoping not to do it again. I don't know if that's where you need to go this year, at least not with that pick. I take some flyers in later rounds. But for me, I think it's offensive line is where I'm looking at a tackle first and foremost, and reason being that I think more than anything else, you can cover up any offensive warts with a good offensive line. You know, you can make you have a good running back, you can make a good running back a great running back. You can make an average quarterback that much better. And I think that you don't really know what you have with Mac Jones right now. If you've got a guy who's just going to kind of be middling through his career and that's the route you want to go, then you better have 5 hosses in front of him. And so I think that it makes sense to me where they're sitting in the round with the guys you're going to see likely coming off the board before them, that they could find some value at the tackle position.
When I see, as far as offensive guards or offensive tackles, Peter Skoronski, mm-hmm, from Northwestern is a name that I see here in the top 10 of prospects.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to think that it's either going to be drafting down or it's going to be, you know, everybody likes the kid Robinson out of Texas, but don't they already have don't the Patriots,
yeah,
already have enough running backs? I think they have more than enough.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he found his way to New England. I think he's one of the more interesting storylines of the draft. Is somebody going to buy high on a running back? I mean, he is that talented, but he is also a running back. So,
right.
You know, I think that the league is kind of smartening up to that value, and so I'd be surprised if he went terribly high off the board. But I don't think it's unlikely that they trade back. I think that Broderick Jones out of UGA is another tackle they've kind of been linked to, and that makes a lot of sense to me because he's a less experienced guy. I think he's of any of the draft eligible tackles, he's played the least at that position. I think they'll look at him as somebody who can be a little bit malleable. He projects well physically, somebody that they can kind of get their hands on and work with. But, you know, I'm looking for as much talent as you can possibly get there, just because really the offensive line coaching has just been such a question mark since Skarnecki retired. So I'd rather have high end talent that I know even if I'm not giving him the best coaching, he's still got a good chance of success.
Does Clem coming in to be the O-line coach, does that help shore it up? I mean,
so I think he's really interesting, right? It was kind of an odd exit from Pittsburgh, and I happen to follow Oregon football pretty closely, and he was there last year. I don't know that he did anything special from a coaching perspective. He's obviously a supremely talented recruiter, so to me that says he's going to relate with the young guys in the locker room. I mean, he's not that far out from his playing days. I think he has the potential to grow into the job. He could be good, but I would be, you know, I would be being disingenuous to suggest I really knew the nitty-gritty of what it's going to take to be good at that job.
Keith, I want to throw it out at you, knowing that, you know, that Isaiah Wynn is a free agent. They drafted him out of Georgia. I mean, do you actually see the Patriots drafting O-line, whether it's a guard or a tackle?
You know what? I feel like that might be where, like I said, a nose tackle or an lineman. They're real short at linemen right now. I mean, you look at this lineman, the Strange draft really hasn't worked out. I mean, he had some flashes, but again, you know, what kind of guy is Cole Strange with a real offensive line coach, with a real offensive coordinator? You know, this team having Matt Patricia last year, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. You know, this team got bashed for a lot on TV, behind the scenes, on social media, that was undeserved. This team was a much better team than people really make it out to be. But I think we're going to see it again, Kevin. I think we're going to all be waiting up for that pick in the first round.
Disappointed.
And I think it's going to be, they'll draft down the next day, and they'll probably take an offensive lineman, definitely an offensive lineman, to protect, to be a quarterback. And you know, there are some good offensive linemen out there for that second round.
I don't know if I just heard you say quarterback, but I know that one thing that has been bandied about is, what is Mac Jones's relationship with Bill Belichick? Is it possible that the Patriots draft a quarterback? It sounds foolish to me, but you know, bringing in Will Levi from Kentucky, mm-hmm. you know, just why would you do that?
No, and you know what? I've been reading a lot of these reports, and to be honest, only one writer out there has said the same thing I said. And I told people that Belichick, this is all smoke and mirrors and stuff to sell papers and get clickbait. Belichick doesn't hate. Why would Belichick hate Mac Jones? He sat there and talked with Nick Saban about Mac Jones. He brought him in. Mac Jones is a Belichick guy. And the last thing he wants is people saying, oh, you drafted this guy and this is another legacy of bad drafts. Belichick knows what the problem was last year, and this is going to be Mac Jones's year to prove the quarterback that we saw under Josh McDaniels and the quarterback we saw under Bill O'Brien at Alabama and Nick Saban. I don't know where all this hate comes from. The locker room speaks very highly of Mac Jones, and I think that's where people really need to pay their attention. When you have a whole locker room that's supporting Mac Jones, hey, let's go for it. The thing is that with a real OC, it's going to be a great camp. I'm very excited for this camp. Trace McSorley comes in from the Ravens. It's his job to lose or keep, and it's going to be real interesting.
I thought McSorley was with the Cardinals last year.
Trace McSorley, I thought he was with the Ravens. He might have been with the Cardinals, but I think the last time we saw him play, he was with the Ravens. I don't think he ever got any time with the Cardinals.
But he's basically a journeyman.
I think he's in here for just to light a fire under these two guys. I think camp this season is going to be the battle between Mac Jones and Zappe. And we're gonna see it. It's going to come down to those two.
Do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think that they, I mean, not only are they not competing for those top quarterbacks in the draft, I think there was even, you know, a thought that maybe day two they take a flyer on Hendon Hooker. But as it happens every year, we always get right down towards crunch time on the draft, and all of a sudden, all of the quarterbacks start moving up the board.
Yeah,
and every year after year, these guys get overrated. Yeah, there's a run. So now Hendon Hooker's a day one guy because you're realizing that, oh no, we're going to see four quarterbacks off the board in the first six, seven picks. So I don't think there's anybody that that you could get really any value with. And I think this is the year that they pass on quarterback altogether. I think that if you just brought in McSorley, you know, as Keith is saying, for whatever purpose, if you think that's, you know, another, a little more camp competition, just a younger backup kind of moving forward from Brian Hoyer, I just think that they're probably, I'd like to think that Bill's going to look at the situation and say, there's just no need to further ruffle any feathers right now. So I don't think that with all of the kind of late pick, I mean, they've got 4 picks in the 6th round, a couple in the 4th. I just don't see them, I don't see them bothering with a project that late anymore. I mean, how many of those guys, you took Zappi last year, you've got McSorley who's in that same vein. I don't know that you're rolling the dice on another late round guy, and they're not going to waste good, high quality picks in the early rounds on a quarterback.
I'm going to ask the silly question, but you know, we see players every draft fall unexpectedly, and there's been times, you know, that I had wished that the Patriots had jumped and went after certain players. Is there a player that right now is touted in the top 10? Maybe a Will Anderson. You know, just to name one, or Paris Johnson Jr., that could fall out of the top 10 of some of the draft boards we see and be there for the taking.
I think you think that the you know, if you're looking at a position of need, I think there is a real outside chance that a guy like Christian Gonzalez from Oregon could fall, just because there's not a ton of separation with Devin Witherspoon, and he, you know, Deontay Banks from Maryland is pretty good, and I think Gonzalez is pretty widely regarded as the number one and just a little bit clear of those guys. But all it takes is, you know, one team thinking Witherspoon's the guy over Gonzalez, and then everybody else who wasn't planning on him being there deciding they want to stick to your guys, and maybe he falls to you. Outside of that, I think it'll be interesting to see just what happens with Jalen Carter. I mean, he's probably a top 3 prospect, but he's had some question marks through the pre-draft process, and really outside of that, you know, that's the only guy that would make sense where the Patriots are at in the first round right now, unless they traded back. If you were going to go after D-line in the first round, that would really be the only guy that made sense. So I would say outside shot at them, but they'd still probably have to move up to get him. I don't know if he could fall all the way to 14.
Keith, what do you think?
He almost nailed the same thing that I was going to say. That's kind of what I've been hearing for Buzz and things of that sort. So I'm right there with him.
How about wide receiver, though? Again, it's something that folks feel as though that it's kind of incomplete, that the wide receiver room. And I mentioned Zay Flowers, and I'm hearing a lot of great things about this kid. It would be great for him to be drafted. And I mean, what do you know about Zay Flowers?
I know that he has shined in an offense that he had no business shining in. I know that he has had...
BC has had a tough couple of years.
Yeah, I mean...
Offensively.
You looked like you were in a good spot with Phil Dracovic, and then, you know, he broke his hand, got an injury in a UMass game, playing in garbage time when he shouldn't have been.
Yep.
And really just, it was never the same player. And even in spite of that, you know, Zay has had, I mean, the probably the best career of a BC wide receiver of all time. And I haven't missed one of his games, so I can tell you that, yeah, you watch the game film, he's damn impressive, and he strikes me as somebody that would exceed expectations here, who fits that slot mold perfectly for the Patriots, but also can play outside. I mean, he's a burner. He played more outside at BC, but he's shifty enough to be a middle-of-the-field guy.
Is it possible that the Patriots don't take a receiver, seeing that they took one in the last draft?
It's possible that they don't?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't bet on them taking a receiver. I think that it's interesting, Kevin, right, because I think a lot of the thought on Bill Belichick's kind of aversion to receivers over the years has been that he doesn't like the diva in the locker room.
Yep.
And you've seen kind of a shift in the NFL where you don't have that diva star receiver as much, but in place of that you have exorbitant wide receiver contracts, so you're just trading one evil for another. They have a horrible history drafting receivers, but I think some of it is almost self-induced, in that they don't want to go for the flashy guy that they know they're going to have a, you know, give a big contract to retain his services. They'd rather a chain mover. That's the style of guy that they seem to go after up until Tyquan Thornton last year. That was kind of a shift in thought. But I think that Zay Flowers sitting there at 14, depending on who's come off the board, could make a lot of sense for them. Maybe that's me, you know, seeing it a little bit more through a fan's lens. But, I think that I would bet against them taking a receiver in the first round.
Yeah, and in looking at Tyquan Thornton's numbers, I mean, you know, he had 45 targets, 22 catches, almost 250 yards, a lot better than, you know, previous rookie wide receivers who've played the position.
Yeah, he looked good in training camp. He looked like he was a guy who was ready to burst out, and then obviously had the injury that kind of derailed his rookie season. But I think he's a guy that, you know, if he gets himself on track, I'd love to see him put on a little weight, feel like he could get, you know, blown over by a stiff breeze. But
a little thicker, right?
Yeah, but he looks like a guy that could be poised for a good leap forward in his sophomore season, so we'll see.
Okay. Keith, what do you think? Do you think it's time to get lucky with another receiver, or the Patriots better off looking for value and trading down?
Yeah, like I said, I think they're going to trade down. I don't see them taking the wide receiver at all. I think they're very happy with what they have for receiving core here. The only backup you would need is for a guy like a Matthew Slater, who's like that fifth wide receiver slot. Maybe they'll get a guy in the late rounds. But like you said, Tyquan Thornton showed some great flashes. The injury really slowed up what we could have seen from him. Devontae Parker was really tearing it up. Kendrick Bourne is another guy that, you know, they go up and get it. You know, we've been always wanting go up and get it guys, and both those two right there, they went up and got it last year. I think you're definitely not going to see them go for a wide receiver in the first round, maybe in the later rounds. If they were to choose a wide receiver, we always know that Belichick has a fondness for wide receivers from Ohio State. You know, we've seen that over the years. And then again, like we've heard, you know, they like to get from these lesser schools, the less flashy schools, you know. So, yeah, I'm expecting them to trade down. I'm not expecting them to do anything in the first round.
Do you guys find yourselves watching the later rounds when it comes to the Patriots, or are you fans of the later round picks? Cause I usually am. Second day, I like watching because of some of the value, you know, yeah. Mel Kiper Jr. and when they're talking about. I mean,
yeah, that's the one thing I'll say. I mean, the day three, once you're getting toward, you know, six and seven, it's a little, you know, it's names you're not recognizing as much. But I do find it interesting, and you know, you just got to. I like to familiarize myself with what's on the board. But I think that for as much frustration as we might have to prepare to have on night one, I think, again, them trading down is probably pretty likely. It's almost a lock that they trade up in the second round. So you're probably going to see some fireworks early in the day in day two. I think it's 5 years in a row now that they've traded up in the second round. So and they've got kind of the weight in the middle of the rounds to move some things and do just that again. So I wouldn't be shocked to see that. So, you know, I mean, hopefully that would be. I'd like to, you know, obviously I want them to make a pick at 14, but
maybe they'll surprise us one of these years.
Yeah.
Maybe one of these years. Quinn Kelly, Keith Hayes, my guests, talking NFL draft. Any possible surprises? Do you look for the surprises in the draft, Quinn?
I think
should I have asked you about the MLB draft? Do you look for surprises in that?
No, yeah, I mean, I think there's always surprises, and I think it as you mentioned earlier, it's going to more often have to do with the guys who slide down the board, you know, and then obviously the classic Bill Belichick D2, D3 pick that comes out of nowhere. But I think this year the biggest thing is that it doesn't seem to be a lot of consensus on the order in which some of these quarterbacks are going to come off the board in the first round. So I think that, to me, will kind of be the prevailing storyline, at least on night one, that I'll be interested to watch.
Keith, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I'm watching to see the teams that don't have solid positions nailed down yet. I know Ravens are doing good with their backup quarterback, but I'd like to see what they're going to do at 22. New ownership is rumored to be coming in for the Washington Commanders. Yep. You know, I really like to see what's going to happen there. Cowboys, again, you know, they miss out, and I'm dying to see what the Cowboys are going to do. So my eyes are going to be on those teams right there. Detroit Lions, I'm really interested to see what they're doing because they didn't lose anybody. And they won a lot of games last year, and I'm like, what are the Lions going to do at number six? If they were an amazing team last year. Yeah. What are they going to do because they didn't lose anybody?
Yeah. Well, my curiosity will be who will be this year's Kyle Duggar for the Patriots because, I mean, they definitely hit on Duggar. Nobody knew who he was. And he's a hitter. And he's great for the defense, but no, offensively, it seems as though the Patriots struggle.
I don't think that it's the same vein because he's less of an unknown, and he was a champion at that level, but and his name's escaped me. The South Dakota State tight end. Don't be shocked if he comes off the board to the Patriots because he's a high upside kid.
I've heard about I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he's linked to Bill O'Brien. O'Brien had been trying to recruit him to Alabama as a transfer for his senior season, and he's a good blocking tight end. So he's going to immediately have a home on the roster without taking away touches from Hunter Henry and can kind of develop behind the scenes so that once Henry's contract is up, he can kind of move into that position. I would keep an eye on him day two for the Patriots.
Okay. Yeah, because I got Dalton Kincaid, Utah, tight end.
I can
kill a few seconds while you...
Tucker Kraft.
Okay, thank you. Yep. And this is what a seam type of a running a tight end, like a.
Yeah, he was really good for the Jackrabbits, and he's a high volume catch guy. But he's definitely an inside the hash marks, and he's a great blocking tight end, which I think that you know always has a home here in New England. So,
well, I want to thank both of you for joining me. Don't forget to tune in to the booth Tuesday nights. What, 7 to 8?
7 to 8. Thank you, Kevin. Yep. Yes, tomorrow.
Yep, and of course the Sports Exchange every Sunday, 5 to 7 p.m. Any chance you would some evaluating of?
Oh yes, yeah. We will be going over each and every pick, trying to familiarize us with some of those ones in the late rounds that we don't know. We'll see how many of the 6th round picks they make, but yes, we'll be on all over it.
As always, thank you so much
for
joining
me.
So be sure to tune into the Sports Exchange with Quinn Kelly, Johnny Rourke, and Brendan Conley in tow. Here on 95.9 WATD. I want to thank you guys for tuning in to Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a good night.